Hey writers, have you been spending small amounts on short-term classes, watching videos, and using up every possible opportunity for free feedback? Reworking the same pages over and over in your writing group? Are you starting to feel like you're stuck in one stage of the process? Maybe it's time to consider making a bigger investment in your career and working with an author accelerator book coach. No one can guarantee that you'll write a book that will snag an agent or excite an editor, but a coach can help you move forward, finish a book or proposal you're proud of, and approach the next stage of the process like a pro. I know it helped me. If that sounds like something you could use, visit www.authoraccelerator.com to get matched with a coach who can help you. Hey writers, welcome to episode 10, the last episode of the hashtag AmWriting Blueprint for a Book series. As always, hashtag AmWriting is the weekly podcast for fun, fresh, actionable writing advice for writers in every genre, fiction, nonfiction, memoir. We are here to help you get inspired, figure out what to do next, and get that work done. I am KJ Dallantonia. I'm the author of two novels, The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, as well as a nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent, and a former editor and writer of The Motherlode at the New York Times.
And I'm Jenny Nash. I am the author of 11 books in three genres. I'm the CEO of Author Accelerator and the creator of the Blueprint Method for Writing Better Books.
So my usual AmWriting co-host, Jess and Serena, have been cheering us from the sidelines. But for this 10-episode series, it has been me and Jenny and a series of guests, and we have been focusing in on books, thus the name, specifically creating a blueprint that will help you go from book idea, as in amorphous blob, to solid plan. And if you have been listening and playing along, you're there, really. You're almost there, but you're there. You have probably totally rushed ahead and started writing by now, and absolutely good for you. That is the point, because doing all of this thinking that for so many of us is way harder than sitting down and getting some words to pour out of our fingers into a keyboard is going to make every single draft better. Sadly, not perfect, but so much better. So today we're going to dig into how we use that blueprint over and over and over again to do exactly that.
And our guest coach today is Barbara Boyd. Barbara is an Author Accelerator certified book coach who has worked with close to 100 writers on more than 200 books. She specializes in nonfiction topics ranging from leadership and finance and marketing and human resources to wellness and agriculture and technology. And she was the coach that I selected to use for my blueprint for a nonfiction book to help me through it. And she saved me, and she's amazing. And welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, KJ.
Jenny has talked a lot about the tough love that you have applied and the horrible moments when you actually made her follow her awful, 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 outcome outline process and outcome outline checklist.
I thought I could get out of it, but Barbara did not allow me to get out of it.
But wait, what is your point?
Exactly.
And I think we all can enjoy imagining that as we hold ourselves to three pages, and you know, Jenny's like, no, I made it. I get 20.
Exactly.
No. In fact, you get two. I'm taking a page away now because you complained. If you didn't do it that way, you should next time.
So what we're talking about this week is what you do when you get to the end of the blueprint. There are 14 steps in the fiction and 14 steps in the nonfiction blueprint, and you work through them, and it's an iterative process itself where you're going back and refining what your point is and who your reader is and what your plot is, or all the things that you need to do over and over and over again. But at a certain point, you're done with the blueprint and you're going to do the next thing. On the fiction side, the next thing is you're going to start writing. And on the nonfiction thing, the next thing is you're going to turn that blueprint contents into a book proposal, which is how most nonfiction books are sold. So we're talking here about a transition to from planning to doing. And I think it's a really important step and a really powerful step. So I'm excited to be talking about it.
And interestingly, and especially if you haven't, if you're just sort of sailing into episode 10 here of this series, that's fine. Because what we're talking about, as Jenny just said, is going from planning to doing. And there are a lot of people who just plan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in life, and, you know, I might be guilty of that, but also in writing, who, you know, I have definitely spoken with writers who have an idea and have done, you know, maybe they've done the blueprint, or they've done an outline, or they've done the blueprint and an outline, or they've done a bond blueprint and an outline and a grid and a storyboard and a picturesque page and a playlist. And, but, you know, it's like, but I don't know. Like, what should the first line, like, you know, I'm sorry, but I spent the last two lines trying to come up with a first line that will be worthy of that section of that one magazine where they list the first lines. That thing, which probably doesn't even exist anymore, still drags on me. I never feel like my first, so don't worry about your first line. But anyway, we're going to go from planning to doing.
That's right. So Barbara, you have coached so many writers and so many books for so long. Do you find people dragging at this stage, wanting to perfect the planning before they move on to the doing? Or how do you experience writers at this stage?
I think writers fall into two categories. There are those, like KJ mentioned earlier, who just can't wait to jump in, and they have probably already jumped in and started writing before they've finished the blueprint. And then there are others who just keep working on the blueprint, or worse yet, just talking about their idea. We'll get on calls. I'm like, have you written anything down yet? Well, no, because I'm not sure what I want to write down yet. No, like, get something on the page, because that's it. As you say, it's iterative. So they tend to fall in those two categories. And as a book coach, part of our job is sort of pushing them over the edge to get them started. But this is the point where your book becomes real. Whether you are writing a fiction book and diving in to start into writing, or if you're working on that book proposal, because the book proposal is also like, that's your business plan for your book, to sell it to the world. And that's a scary step to take. How many entrepreneurs talk about their business idea and it never gets off the ground? And it's the same thing, I think, with a book.
Yeah, it's really true. I think that what you've hit upon, these two different paths, are there's that path of sort of close your eyes and jump, and they just want to go, go, go. And then there's the path of sort of the perfectionist, which is, well, it's not exactly right, so I shouldn't move forward until it's exactly right. And, both of those are trying to protect the writer from pain. and we all know there's no protection from the pain
I would agree. There's no protection from the pain, but with the blueprint, you've got a map or, you know, a blueprint. Like, you have some direction. You're not just making a leap into the unknown, and you can always go back and remedy things as you're writing and find out, oh, wait a minute, this doesn't work. And the blueprint gives you that structure to sort of grab onto and go back and fix it.
So I feel like now that we've divided the universe into these two types of people, those who are already writing or those who are listening to this happily, but they have a draft, you know, and don't really have a blueprint. I guess it's kind of like those who resist the planning and those who cling to the planning. And there are absolutely, I really think I fall into the middle. I actually love the planning, but I also love the, I don't have any trouble driving in. So, okay, we got three types of people. And I feel like in nonfiction, our planners are kind of really protected. As long as they don't think too hard about what that proposal actually is and the fact that they're actually going to use it and send it to people, they now get to shift into proposal mode. So there's some writing, but it's not, you're not actually writing the book yet. You're still a little step removed from that. Whereas for our actual writers, that was wrong. Our actual book divers is really what I meant. Like the ones that get to skip the proposal stage and just write the stupid book, which is way worse because you have to finish it. It's not really way worse. They're both worse. Sorry.
What KJ is trying to say is it's all hard.
It's all hard,
right? It's all hard. I mean, really, I made the blueprint and the tools within it because I am
to be sadistically hard.
I imagined this world I actually did. I imagined a business in which I would attract all these writers to come at zero, where they had not started anything, and do the blueprint like in this pristine world. It was my utopian world, and we would methodically go through the blueprint, and then they would start writing their books. And that is not the way of the world. Oftentimes, people are coming to the blueprint because they're stuck, or they've written a draft that doesn't work, or they've been sending a proposal out and it's getting rejected, and they don't know why. You know, oftentimes it's a salvation tool and not an origination tool. So it is just sort of interesting because the creative process is messy. It is not linear. It is not straightforward. And I think it does involve some pain. And so I want to talk a little bit about, I know you're in it, KJ. I just experienced this my own self with Barbara as my coach, working on the blueprint, the nonfiction book, what exactly we mean by pain, because it's really a specific kind of thing that you're fighting against, which is it's about time. Like, you want to be done. I gave a draft to Barbara thinking like, I got this, I'm done, I'm good. And then the pain is the awareness. No, you're not. It's not working. There's things that are demonstrably wrong. It's not an opinion. It's you haven't done what you set out to do. And so the pain is then, I have so much work to do. It's going to cost me time. I thought I had done it. Now I'm disappointed. Now I'm bummed out, whatever the feeling or emotion that you're feeling is. But it's a really odd thing about wanting to have finished the thing and done the thing, but you have to be in the thing. Am I making sense, Barbara? You probably know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. And what comes to mind is that it's the pain of thinking you're going to get away with something and you really can't.
That's it.
Because I think we all know when it's not working, but we're just tired. It's like, I can't figure out how to make it work, and this is what I've got, and I'm just going to try and get away with it. And you can't. I mean, you could, but somebody's going to call you out on it, whether it's your book coach or your mom or, you know, whoever, your first reader, those terrible people writing negative reviews on Amazon. And, you know, whoever that is, sooner or later, somebody's going to call you out. And I think that's the fear. There's this, like, what's the worst case scenario? I have to redo the work, and that's painful because I've already put so much time in it, or I'm going to get called out because I really should have redone the work.
Yeah, I've told this story before, but I had a professor in law school, and I had successfully sailed through, I must say, my entire educational career, including writing a thesis for a secondary degree, without anyone ever calling me out on the fact that I was, you know, sliding over deep thoughts with pretty words and, you know, topic sentences that reached conclusions. And finally, in my third year of law school, which was also the most challenging school that I had ever attended, I had this one professor, and he was Larry Lessig. Hi, Larry. And he wrote on a paper that I had turned in, I swear to you, it was the final semester. He's like, I hesitate to ask you to rewrite this, but there is actually nothing here. So I'm going to. And it was just like, I mean, yeah, my head blew up, yeah. Basically. Because he was totally right. There was nothing there. Like, yeah.
I run into that a lot with business books.
Thoughts are hard, man. I didn't want to express any of them.
Thoughts are hard. And corporate America is full of those sentences that sound great. And you're like, ooh, yeah. And then you try and repeat it. And you're like, oh, I have no idea what that says. And yep. I call people out on those all the time. Like, this is really pretty, but what does it mean? No, and the blueprint protects you.
Yeah, and I love this conversation because what we're getting at is this really big idea of why we write. Why we write is we want our words to mean something. We want to be seen as somebody who has original deep thoughts or ideas or stories. That's what we're after here. And the idea of submitting yourself to a judgment and being called out is one of the reasons why it's so scary for a lot of people to pitch their book or their book proposal, because that's what you're doing. You're submitting yourself to be judged. And what we're talking about is willfully doing that on your own early in the process and perhaps throughout the process so that you can write the book you want to write. So that pain is the pain of, there's a huge amount of trust that has to happen when, you know, and when I selected Barbara to be my book coach, I knew I needed somebody who was going to be tough on me. And because I run the business that trains the people, I was worried that I would have people sort of pandering to me or like telling me. And so it was like, I need the trust of somebody who is going to tell me the truth, because I don't want to put out a book that's not the best it can be. And, you know, so it's that idea of willfully seeking out the tough love and being ready to hear it. And I don't know, KJ, you're in the same boat. You're a highly accomplished writer and editor, and you submit yourself to this all the time, both with your critique partners, with your agent, with your editor. You've done it with me. You know, why do you, what's that impulse for you?
Well, I'm not really worried about nobody calling me out of my fiction, but well, I want to get it right. I mean, I want to say something. I don't want somebody to read the book and go, well, there was no there there. You know, and so that is really important to me. And I was just thinking as you were telling that story, because I am not in this boat when it comes to fiction. Maybe nonfiction, maybe if I went to write an essay for a young editor right now, maybe. But I was thinking, and I'm going to go ahead and use him as an example, both because I suspect he might agree with me now, this is somewhat in the past, and also because I'm sure he doesn't listen to the podcast. Andrew Solomon, who wrote a book called Far From the Tree, and it was about raising kids that were really different from you, and he, I believe, had won the Pulitzer before he wrote this. It's something huge. He was a name. I mean, he was and is a towering figure in the world of sort of psychology and writing and family and relationships. And Far From the Tree is about 800 pages long, not exaggerating. It might be 1,000. It should have been 400. And you could see reading that somebody wasn't, He wanted to tell, what he did was tell these whole stories of the people that he had interviewed. And the book, although it was, you know, people read it, or at least they bought it, someone needed to tell him, you can't tell these people's whole story. You must only tell the important part of it that is going to speak to your reader. And, you know, I grieve that book because it could have been great. And instead, it's really hard to find the use for it. And I get excited when I can use a real example, so I sure hope nobody, I hope that's not offensive, he doesn't listen to this, but you know, his editor should have challenged him, and you see that a lot. The further someone gets in their career, the less likely they are, and I think the more important it becomes to seek out the person who is going to help you actually write the thing that you want to write.
And I wonder if he used any sort of like outline or blueprint, because I think as a tool that would have perhaps stopped him from being so verbose.
Probably not. And, you know, I think it's the book he wanted, it's probably the book he wanted to write, and it tells the stories that he wanted to write. And he was at a point in his career when he could do that. It is my opinion that more readers might have gotten more out of it if it had been handled differently. So you got to decide, I guess. Do you get to publish anything you want? And do you want to publish anything you want? And I think as readers, we've all seen examples of things where we're like, people throw that around. Oh, this needed editing. And sometimes that just means, oh, I didn't get it. Or, oh, I don't know what to say and I'm supposed to write a review. sometimes it's real. And sometimes, in memoir, there's a whole different world of it, right? Tell us what you want us to have to learn from your experience and be there with you and get to where you have gotten to, as opposed to, tell us everything that happened from the very beginning. It's a different, those are different
yeah.
books.
There's an example that Barbara and I are both very familiar with of a writer that Barbara's been coaching in one of Author Accelerator's programs. And this person's writing a memoir about her own story. And there's also a very serious scientific topic connected to her own story, and the art of that has been balancing the how much science, how far into the science, how deep into the science, how much of her story, what is the weaving of those things together like, what is that? There's a real art to it, to a memoir like that, and I wonder, Barbara, if you could speak about I'm being vague on purpose, just not to betray the writer or the topic, but the process of going from the concept, which is what the blueprint is. This is my concept, this is my idea, I'm going to be doing this thing, and now working on the actual proposal, actually starting to write a chapter on the nonfiction side, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak, getting it on the page. What is that like, taking a writer from that point into the more expansive version of it?
I think the holes in the blueprint showed up in writing those first chapters, because as you say, it was so important to blend her story and the science part of it. And while there were some pointers in the blueprint to how that would happen, it wasn't until writing the sample chapters that it became very evident of, I need to give more thought to this, because it's hard to link together what's out there and what's inside. And she did it beautifully. I mean, she really went back to the page and thought about it in her sample chapters, and I'm sure that will happen going forward. So that's also an example of how the blueprint is iterative. We knew that was a question that would come up, and there was thought that went into it, but when she got to the page to writing, it became evident that more thought was necessary.
So I don't want to disappoint anyone who thought we were going to really dig hard into what a book proposal is for nonfiction, because we're probably not. I guess, can we just touch really briefly on what that proposal, what are the things you take from the blueprint that turn into that proposal? And maybe if you have a favorite book out, because really, I've written a book proposal, and the best thing to do is to go get a book or something that tells you exactly what that should look like, and maybe get somebody else's in your genre if you have someone who will do that for you. And just do what the people want, right?
yeah.
So yeah. So but talk to us about how you go from outcome outline into actual proposal.
Yeah, and I can give a really big picture view of the book proposal, because the whole reason that I designed the blueprint, at least the origin story of the blueprint, is I was helping people with nonfiction proposals, and they were you're right, KJ, there's elements that they all have to have. There's 8 elements that they all have to have. It's an overview or synopsis of the whole book, author bio, audience analysis, what the comp titles are, a marketing plan, sample chapters, a table of contents. It's just, this is what it is. And it, as Barbara mentioned, it's a business case for your book. It's a sales tool. You're trying to get someone to invest in your book. It is document designed to entice other people. And so many clients were coming to me with these book proposals where they had not asked the fundamental questions of themselves. Who is my reader? What am I trying to do? What outcome do I want them to achieve? What else are they reading? Where does this fit in the marketplace? They hadn't asked any of those questions. And so it felt they were putting the cart before the horse. And so it's like, okay, let's make the horse. Is that the right way to say that? I don't know. But the blueprint was designed to say, okay, all these book proposals are not good enough. How do we make them good enough? Well, we need a container to answer those questions before we start trying to sell the idea. We need to know what the idea is. That's why I made the blueprint. The first thing I made was a nonfiction blueprint. It's like, okay, person who's coming to me for help with this proposal, let's answer these questions first and get those solid, and then we can make a good proposal. So the whole point of the blueprint was because I saw a deep need to answer the fundamental questions. And then it became obvious that the same thing was happening in fiction. In fiction, so a book coach is, nobody goes to a book coach if they're doing well. Like if they're sailing through their writing career and they're getting book deals and their books are selling and they're making money and things are great, they do not come to a book coach. They come to a book coach when they get stuck, or they come to a book coach when they can't get the thing that they want, or they need help or something. And so oftentimes what we see on the fiction side is manuscripts that just fall off a cliff. It's like, sounds like a great idea. First three chapters are great. Just falls apart after that. And the writers are wringing their hands and trying to figure out, why can't I get an agent? Why can't I get book sales? Why don't I get reviews? And again, the blueprint was designed like, okay, let's take a step back and look at these fundamental questions of your story. Can you answer these questions about your story? And the answer is always no, if somebody is stuck. And so the nonfiction blueprint for a nonfiction book, which is the new book I've just written, is take somebody through on the nonfiction side, blueprint, proposal, and then pitch. And Barbara actually helped me back to what a book coach helps you do. I was really wrestling with whether or not to go all the way into pitching, because pitching, this is sort of what you've just touched on, KJ. Here we are at the end of our 10 weeks, and we're talking about that. We just opened a can of worms to an entirely new topic, which is proposals, pitching, the whole thing. And I didn't want my book to go into that space because it felt like a whole other thing. But Barbara helped me to see that somebody who's writing a nonfiction book proposal is already thinking about pitching, that it needed to be part of that. So where the boundaries or the edges are is another thing that it can really help with. So the process is just very iterative, where it's blueprint on the nonfiction side, it's blueprint to proposal, round and around and around, getting it right, like starting the chapters, do they fit, going back to the blueprint, going back to the outcome outline, just constantly around and around and around until you get it solid. And on the fiction side, obviously, it's, okay, I think I understand my story. I've got the fundamentals right. I've got it solidly in place. Now I'm going to write. But you know, you well know, KJ, you get into that process and it's not smooth sailing.
No, it's never as solid as you thought it was. Or it doesn't work as well, or, you know, you realize that the way that things are happening doesn't support your protagonist's need to learn the lesson that they need to learn, you know, or the antagonist isn't, yeah, just the list of things that go wrong is endless and varied and constant. And I have often thought that really the best time for me to write a really good inside outline for you to use, Jenny, in like a book or a sample would be after I've written that book. And that is totally not fair. And that's actually one of the things that's I love writing a lot of writing books, and in particular, I love Save the Cat Rides a Novel. It's a big favorite of mine. But when you look at those examples of her hopping through and saying, oh, and look, here's the thing in the middle, and here's the point when the protagonist wrote, you're, again, you're doing that thing. You're comparing your first draft to somebody else's final draft. And this writer is using their final drafts to show you the process. But because it's a final draft, it looks so much easier than it actually is. Because it's been done after somebody worked their way through all of this stuff successfully.
Yeah, it's reverse engineering. And that a lot of writing methods do that. It's like, let's look at a movie or finished novel or break apart a famous thing that we all know to see what they did. But yeah, you're right. It's kind of not fair because
it's useful. It's super useful. I adore that book, but it's not what you're doing when you do this. You're on the other end of it and you're trying to get, when you get to that point, you won't even have the, like you won't have an inside outline anymore. You'll have a book.
That's right.
You know, there's no reason to go other than for my own crazy mind sometimes. And I've not done that. But
I think of these tools as an external hard drive for your brain while you're writing, where you're going to contain things in it and set it over here, because it's hard to keep a whole book in your head while you're developing it and remembering, where am I going? What is this point of this chapter? What am I trying to do here? And you need something to help you. I mean, when you really think about the number of decisions a writer has to make in writing a book, it's quite staggering. It's quite an intellectual feat of decision making. And you need something to help you. I mean, if you're the type of person that can sit down and just do it, or maybe just do a blueprint type thing and then just like whip the book out, like that's a particular kind of genius. But most people, Barbara, don't you find most people struggle? I mean, you work with people who are very accomplished in their fields in nonfiction, and they're used to being authoritative and right. Do you find that they're surprised by how hard the writing process is?
They're surprised by how hard the revisions process is. I think getting that first draft is okay, but then like polishing is really hard. It's because I think there's this myth of writers in their ivory towers and they just sit down and it pours forth and it's perfect. And that's so not true.
I'm going to time you out on the word polishing, because polishing is exactly what you cannot do when you start into a revision, right?
Right. Right.
The first thing you do is not polish. You making those sentences better? Uh-uh. It's, did it match that blueprint? Does it fulfill these needs? Is it answering the question? Is the reader satisfied with the way that this chapter is? Should it be in a different place? Do not polish.
That's a great point.
Because that's the temptation. Yeah. Right? Is like, I finished this and it got to the end and there is something like, you know, it did go from beginning to end, and I feel like I've said the end, and the temptation is just to go back and rub every chapter to a sheen. I mean, and that's where I am right now, is like, literally, I'm using Scrivener, and I've put different cards in that are the current outline, and I keep having to find that the original draft is sort of laying underneath the current outline, so things, I'll be sitting there going, where is the part where, you know, this thing happens? And now it's like four cards back because it's a mess. But I'm not polishing any words at this point.
Well, I can give a specific example of something that Barbara helped me do. So I've been teaching the blueprint for 12 years now and refining it and iterating it. And we've certified 100 coaches who are helping thousands of writers. So I have taught this material a lot. And in the nonfiction blueprint, when I was writing the book, there's a section, I can't remember what step it is, but it's structure, where it's like, okay, now you're going to decide upon a structure for your nonfiction book. And I think of it always as a container that you're going to sort of pour the material in. And I talk about this idea of stealing structure and that there's different prototypes. And, you know, you just pick a prototype that is going to fit your material. So this is a thing I've written about a million times. So in, you know, when I get to the writing of it, though, Barbara called me out on that and questioned. I had these four structural prototypes, and she said, I think two of them are actually the same, and I think you're confusing everybody by having it be four, and, you know, I think you need to think about that. And I was, like, mad, because I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. I've been teaching this forever. Like, this works. Why would I change it? I'm not going to question this. And, you know, there's that's the work. That's the fight is, well, oh, and then it was like, okay, maybe I'll think about what she said. And then I look at it and I think about it and, you know, what have you. And then finally it's like, oh, yes, she's right. But then it's not as simple as, oh, okay, I'll just make it three instead of four. It's then this the whole mindset thing of, but what will people say? I've been teaching it four this whole way, and now I've suddenly made it three. Like, will they think that I don't know what I'm talking about? Will I undercut my own authority? Will I, you know, all those things that are not about words on the page or structure or anything. They're just about our own feelings or our own ego or what have you. And Barbara, I remember you said something to me that was just so beautiful and so pertinent to what we're talking about, which was something along the lines of you write the best book you can right now. That's your job, right? You do the best you can right now today. And maybe you know something more today than you knew a few years ago. Or maybe if you're writing fiction, your story is more clear to you than it was, or your point is more clear, your character is more clear, or, you know, it's writing is a thing that you do in space and time. And today, you know, when I am writing this book, that's the way I see it. And that's the clarity that I have. And doing that work of just trying to be clear and of trying to be better and of trying to get it on the page in a way, you know, with nonfiction, you're actually trying to help somebody do something. You're trying to help them learn something or understand something, in this case of writing a nonfiction book. And that's what my goal is. That's what I want, is for people to use this and to understand this. And so that's what we mean by the iterative process. That, you know, KJ's point, this is not polishing sentences. This had nothing to do with a sentence. It had to do with a concept and an idea and an approach and a way of thinking. And Barbara, don't you think that's what the hard work is?
It is, especially in nonfiction, because so often, like you, your book is part of an ecosystem of many other things. So there are consequences, not only for the book and the way that you've been teaching this, but also the other pieces of your business. And that's true for so many books in nonfiction, in that, you know, authors have often been giving a presentation and they're like, this is a great idea and I'm going to turn it into a book. And then you start working on it and realize maybe there is a better way of doing this. But ego steps in and is like, well, wait a minute, you're the expert. Like, shouldn't you know this? Why didn't you see this before? And it's like, we all see new things every day about everything. And I think even in fiction that can happen, when you've got an idea and you're tied to it and you've been telling people, I've got this idea and there are six protagonists, and you start writing and you're like, how am I going to manage six protagonists? And so things change, and change is hard. Nobody wants to change.
Nobody wants to change. Nobody wants to change. And you don't want to, I mean, you know, you go back to the inside outline in fiction, and you realize that in order to, you know, really get in depth about to really dig into the protagonist relationship with somebody or something like that, this thing that happened at chapter three now needs to happen in chapter eight. And it's just like, oh, change. There's so much change involved in that. And you literally do. You just sit there going, couldn't we just, maybe it could happen a little bit in chapter three, and then we'll just like get out of it. Or maybe it could happen twice. What if it happens twice? You know, because you're just fighting like all the things that you're going to have to change.
And you don't want to be wrong, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to be wrong. That's the thing. It's, you don't want to change and you don't want to be wrong. And the, I feel like the creative process is just a series of realizations that you don't quite have it. You don't quite have it. You are wrong. You've got to go back. You've got to do it again. You've got to this and that. It's that iterative process. And I can't stress that enough, that there's no writer that doesn't go through that. You know, what KJ, you were talking about before, nobody just sits down and pounds out a fabulous narrative straight through. Or if they do, they're in the 0.01%, you know, and we can't pretend that we are going to do that.
No, if you do that, you know it.
Yeah.
Someone's told you. You're fine.
Yeah.
You're probably not listening because you're busy pounding out a narrative, or maybe you're just listening to chuckle to yourself evilly as you drive your car from one successful book presentation to another. Yeah. I don't know. But no, this is hard. Hello, we have now reached the end of the Blueprint book series.
And our messages.
Welcome to it getting a whole lot harder. Hey, I am realizing that we have not talked about memoir in this context, not one little itsy bitsy bit. And I think that's partly because the bad news here is lots of times memoirists come and they say, so, wait, do I submit a finished book or a proposal? And everyone smiles happily and says, oh, both. Yeah.
Memoir is the absolute hardest genre in my mind to write if you want to sell and to coach. It just is. There is just no question about it. And all the tools that we've been talking about apply to memoir. But you're right, you need to do the fiction blueprint because you are the protagonist and you're writing a story, and you need to have all the things we talked about, the tension and the character having agency and what their journey is and what their change is and what's against them on the inside and the outside. So you need to think of yourself as the protagonist of that story. But then in terms of selling that book, I always have my clients also do a book proposal because you're putting it in the context of the marketplace. You're thinking about who that reader is going to be and how you're going to reach them. And you want to have every tool in your arsenal that you can to try to get attention for that memoir. But it's tough out there for memoir. So these requirements, I'm using air quotes, I use only because I want my clients to have the best possible chance in a situation that is tough, that you know is tough going into it. Barbara, I know you coach memoir as well. Mm-hmm. Do you, what are you finding these days?
A lot of people choose to go a hybrid or self-publishing route, but I still have them work on a book proposal because they need to think about the marketing part of it. They've got to think about audience and positioning. And I mean, that's true. You know, we all need to market our work, whether we have a publishing house behind us or not. And you know, they need to think about those things. I mean, stepping back, I have one client now who is in revisions on her memoir, and she is not yet to polishing. She's just still, she does a little bit of polishing as she's going along because she can't stop herself, but.
None of us can, but really, you don't polish until somebody else has edited, and If you're the only person who's touched this book, there's no point in polishing.
No. And she knows that too. She's still like, oh no, this is still a draft. I'm nowhere near ready. And then she shared she's going to work with a self-publisher with Atmosphere. And she shared some chapters and that person had some comments. And now she's like, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, we keep kind of circling back to her inside outline and the blueprint and just working, going forward and working it.
Yeah, so that's where we end the blueprint journey is with the news that there is no ending to the blueprint journey, and all you get to do now is go forward and work on it again and again and again, and even unto the future when your book is sitting behind you on a pretty shelf while you talk on a podcast, you will be thinking, you know, I could have really. You will.
Could have done it. Could have done something.
Well, could have done a little more with that.
The actual assignment for this week is to revise all the things and to go back and iterate. So you're now doing the thing that we've just been talking about. You're going to go back through those 9 steps and make sure that they're holding together to the best of your ability and think and put into the test and all of those things, revise. And then we have an opportunity for you to turn them in and get some coaching on them. So that's the assignment for the week. And if you're not doing the coaching piece, you are going to just do the revision and iterate and share it with a critique partner or a trusted friend or an editor or advisor and try to get some honest feedback so that you can do it again, iterate again.
So first I want to say that my favorite thing to go back to is the back of the book copy or the flap copy or the blurb or whatever you want to call it, because reiterating that often really helps me. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But we also haven't ever really laid out for listeners, if you never went in and peeked at the show notes and took a look at what you could do with finishing a blueprint, there is the opportunity in the show notes and in completing this to get yourself some coaching if you've been doing it in real time with us as we are coming out with episodes. Even if you've never signed up for the emails, you can go back in and it's a huge bargain. Really. And I have to say, because people will listen to this at all times, that this will come back around and come back around. So if you're listening to this in between, you know, keep your eyes open or reach out to Author Accelerator and see if you can find a coach who'd be willing to coach you through the blueprint. But if you're listening to it in real time or doing it as part of one of the series, then there's the chance to get this for, you know, way less than it might normally cost you. And I was going to throw out a number, and then I realized, man, that might change. So sorry, I think you're going to have to go into the show notes.
I also can't remember the number, but it was, we did set it at a price that was very reasonable. The Author Accelerator certified coaches have been guests on these 10 episodes, and you can hear how smart they are and how passionate they are and how committed they are. And these are the folks that you get putting their eyes on your work. And I think if you've never been coached, it's an extraordinary thing. Every writer at a certain point will say that being edited or coached is their favorite thing, because you have somebody paying as much attention to your words as you're paying and caring as much as you're caring, and that's really what this is about. So we're thrilled to offer this to the folks who've done the challenge, and as KJ said, if you're listening to this after the fact, we're still here. So we can still help you out.
So Barbara, thank you so much for joining us for this our final blueprint episode. Can you tell listeners where they can find you if they want to reach out specifically to you for coaching, which I have a feeling after hearing Jenny has used you.
Sorry, Barbara.
I don't know. It depends if they want tough love or not. So they can go to my website, which is barbarajboyd.com, because there are other Barbara Boyds in the world. So the J will get you to.
But she's the J.
Yes, so that will get you to my website, and that I talk about coaching and what I offer.
Great. So that link will be in the show notes as well. All right, any last thoughts for the people as we wrap up our Blueprint series, Jenny?
Oh, I just want to thank you, KJ, for inviting me and Author Accelerator coaches to join you for this summer. It's just a thrill to jump in and speak to your listeners. And I know from being out in the world with so many writers that what you guys have created at the hashtag I'm Writing podcast is a real community and a real place people feel that they can go and learn and grow as writers. It's an incredible thing you've done. And so I just want to thank you and Jess and Serena for inviting us to be a small part of it.
Well, thank you. This is kind of the biggest series that we've ever done. You and I did a series last summer, but this one's got so many moving parts and so much, I think, for our listeners to do and get from it that I'm really excited. I feel like it's a new era. It's a new thing for us. So I'm super excited to be sharing it with everyone. All right. Well, so that's it. Go back and listen to the previous episodes of the Blueprint Lab for a book if you haven't already. Listen to them again. Get the blueprint for a book. If you just want to sort of do this on your own and not mess around with our emails or anything like that, you can get Jenny's Blueprint for a Book and Blueprint for a Nonfiction Book, pretty much anywhere online that books are sold. Certainly there'll be links in the show notes. That's one you can 100% get or download on Amazon or iBooks, which is another great place to download a book. Highly, highly recommend if you want to just kind of do the DIY version of this. You will enjoy it. All right. I think that is it for us. So until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Hey kids, KJ here, inviting you to pre-order In Her Boots wherever you like to do that sort of thing. So my latest book, In Her Boots, is about the adult we know we are, the kid our mothers will always see, and our terrible fear that our mothers are right. But it's also about an accidental literary hoax, a family farm, and BFFs who will do anything to help each other show the world who they really are. So if it sounds like you'll like it, you probably will. And if it's not for you, maybe it's for your mom, your sister, or your BFF. And books make great hostess gifts. Pre-orders tell booksellers that this is a book readers will want and encourage them to keep it on their shelves. So as a bonus, if you pre-order, I will happily send you a signed book plate and an adorable cowboy boot sticker to show off your city girl in the country vibe, or vice versa. So head to kjdelantonia.com for all the details. Thanks!